The next case is Performance Construction versus Change Investment.
It pleases the court. My name is Rod Harmon. I represent Performance Construction. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes. When Emma Jacklin died under the terms of her will, fee simple title to her home passed to her trust, and that title remained in the trust until the trustee conveyed it by deed to Performance Construction. The home was foreclosed upon. Performance timely redeemed, and is entitled to a certificate of redemption. The trial court did not give us a certificate of redemption. That's what we've come to this court for. The issue is not, was this home, title of the home, conveyed into the trust? That happened because of Emma Jacklin's will. The question is, how did it get out of the trust? Now, we contend, and we agree with the respondents, that it gets out of the trust by deed. Performance Construction has a deed. The contention that the respondents make is that the trustor, through the trust instrument, made a deed to convey the property 5 years after she died. And our response to that is that can't be a valid deed. You have to convey, to be a valid deed, you have to convey during the grantor's lifetime.
But we do have a deed from Mr. Anderson deeding his redemption rights and all other interests he has in the property, and that's done by deed.
That's correct.
And at that same time, he had a vested right to the property, right?
He had a beneficial right. He had a beneficial interest. And the beneficiary in a trust doesn't own it. In fact, the trust instrument itself says the real property assets are owned by the trustee as an absolute owner, that's who manages it. And there was a spendthrift provision.
But it goes to him. It's vested in him after 5 years.
It does.
There's nobody else in front of him in that language, is there?
Well, yes. Sal Jacklin was in front of him for 5 years.
There's nobody else. After the five-year period has run, there's nobody else that has a greater title to that property than him.
What it doesn't tell us is what vested.
Well, fee title. You started your argument by conceding that he had fee title to the property.
You can talk about vesting in terms, and do talk about vesting, in fact, in a trust. It's a very important concept between a contingent beneficiary and a vested beneficiary. Contingent interest versus vested interest. Those are extremely important concepts for perpetuities purposes. And in fact, 1198-140, in the statutes that govern trusts, makes this distinction. It says, well, if the trust says distribute an asset, then it shall be distributed. But if it says a beneficial interest is vested, then it shall be vested. So those are two different concepts. And what this didn't make clear was, well, what exactly was it that was vested? And I suggest to the court that what we're in the context, first of all, we're in the context of a trust. So what we should be talking about is beneficial interest, unless the trustor is going to make it very clear that it's somehow going to be conveyed out of a trust. Secondly, it can't get out of a trust without the action of the trustee. Once it's in the trustee is the one who acts. So even if it said, well, for example, it does say.
Let me ask you a question. At the time that the deed was issued to Chang, the five-year estate had expired. That person had died. He was the only person entitled under the terms of the will or the trust to the property. That's the interest that was vested. Was he not at that point entitled to take a trustee to court if they did not issue the title to him, to have the estate that hadn't been probated to have the trustee issue a deed to him?
No, because the trustor said what he gets has to be subject to a spendthrift provision.
If the spendthrift provision did not apply, would my premise be correct? That a beneficiary who has the sole right to the property is still held in trust and not distributed, has a right to ask the court to distribute the property?
Yes, but I'd have to qualify that. Under RCW 1198-145, it says that when the trust terminates, the trustee shall expeditiously proceed to distribute. So in other words, it takes the action of the trustee, but subject to the responsibility to take care of expenses and debts and taxes. So the trustee still has control over that. In fact, the trustee under
But we don't have any of those issues here.
Well, we don't know about
So what we have is a question of whether or not the spendthrift provision applies, whether there's any basis to have a TEDRA agreement. Because absent those considerations, he would have had a right to insist on the probate and the distribution.
Yes, but it was still in the trust, you see. So the trustee still had control over it. So whether the beneficiary has the right to go to court and say the trustee should convey it to me, doesn't take it away from the trustee's power to convey it to someone else. Yeah.
And there was no trustees.
But there's nobody else for him to distribute it to. I mean, the trustee...
No, he could sell it, which is what he did. He could sell it.
But before... I want to come back to this spendthrift, though.
Sure.
As I read, first of all, the assignment of the property is within paragraph 4.5a, which is the list of primary beneficiaries. When I read the residual clause, which has the spendthrift language, it says it's all property not specifically and validly disposed of by paragraph 5a. This property is part of 5a. So the spendthrift, as I read it, doesn't apply. How do you respond to that?
The spendthrift provision itself says that all trust property of a spendthrift beneficiary.
No, but we don't get to the spendthrift. You have to come back up to paragraph 5b, which sets up the residual beneficiary in Mr. Anderson. And it specifically, as I read it, excludes the property in paragraph 5a from the spendthrift.
Except that the spendthrift provision itself says differently. It says all property. I mean, they're contradictory. I mean, I agree with you. They're contradictory. These are contradictory provisions. And how do you make sense out of these contradictory provisions? That was one reason for the TEDRA agreement, not just to supply a trustee. We didn't have a trustee in the trust at the time, but also to figure out, well, what exactly does the rest of this mean? And all of the parties that were interested in the trustor, the beneficiaries, and the trustee. Are those parties? Well, all we had really were beneficiaries. They all joined in the TEDRA agreement, and they said, well, this is what it means. It means that the property is still in the trust. Now, why would Emma Jacklin have wanted her home to be outside of the trust, but the residue inside the trust? She was trying to protect her spendthrift son. That's why. He's the only one.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mike Gosler representing the Chang and Cascades, the respondent. In the opening brief of the appellant poses the question of who was the owner of the property at the time the bargain and sale deed was delivered to Chang and Cascades in exchange for $10,000. It then said, the argument then is that to answer that question turns on two things. One, the terms of the trust, and two, the impact of the TEDRA agreement in how you interpret the trust. It then goes on to spend roughly 16 pages of the brief talking about TEDRA and the TEDRA agreement and how that is to be applied to this particular set of facts. And then it concludes that based upon the TEDRA agreement that was executed, the property should be deemed to have remained in the trust and not to have been distributed Mr. Johnson or Mr. Anderson in 2010 at the expiration of the 5 years. I submit that the TEDRA agreement was nothing more than an after-the-fact attempt to otherwise overcome what is indisputably clear evidence and within the instrument itself that the property was to be vested in Mr. Anderson at the end of 5 years. That became effective upon M's death. It effectively is the disposition is effectively an estate for years, 5 years, with a vested remainder right left to Thomas Anderson. That argument was not the argument that was made in the reply brief was new. Therefore, we didn't specifically address it in our brief in responding to the opening brief. But had we, I would have referenced the fact that this was, in fact, a distribution that took effect immediately, and only the passage of time, 5 years, ultimately had to occur before he was vested in title. And so when the 5 years came and went, Mr. Anderson became the fee simple owner of that property and had the right to and did sell it and was paid consideration for it. And it was after the there was some colloquy about whether a trustee could have been appointed and compelled to execute a deed, and that would have been the remedy, but for the fact that the property was disposed of through a judicial foreclosure sale, with my clients being the purchaser at that foreclosure sale. And then the question is, what were the redemption rights held by, who held the redemption rights, and were they transferred to my clients when the bargain and sale deed was issued by Thomas Anderson to my clients? And I think the answer undisputably is that there was an effective transfer of title because title was vested. The word vesting is not ambiguous.
How do you read the spendthrift trust?
I read the spendthrift trust to apply only to 5B. It's very, very specific. When you go to the original trust, 5A is defined as primary beneficiaries, and at that moment in time, Emma left four specific bequests, which did not include the house. And then Part B is the residuary beneficiary clause, which says that the residuary beneficiary of the trust shall be Thomas Anderson, per stirpes, who shall be given all trust property subject to paragraph 10, and not specifically and validly disposed of by paragraph 5, part A. Well, the house, the later amendment, which distributed or vested the property in Thomas Anderson after 5 years, is specifically part of 5A. And so by its very specific terms, the residuary clause only applies to whatever wasn't already distributed to primary beneficiaries under Part A. And so only that which was left would be protected by the spendthrift provisions in the trust agreement because everything else was previously distributed. And the fact, maybe she understood there were homestead rights under Washington's exemptions, and maybe she felt that was sufficient. I don't know. But the point is, this language is not at all ambiguous and very definitely has the spendthrift clause only applying to the property that was not specifically distributed per paragraph A. And I think, from my perspective, the most compelling, perhaps single most compelling evidence of what shall vest means is not only the dictionary definitions that we cite, but if you look at RCW 1104-250, which has real property vesting immediately in a beneficiary if there's a transfer under a will, whether a deed is issued or not, the legislature used the following language. When a person dies seized of lands, tenements, or hereditaments, or any right thereto or entitled to any interest therein in fee or for the life of another, his or her title shall vest immediately in his or her heirs or devisees. And then it goes on to use the same to vest such title language.
So if there had been a probate, there's no question.
There would be no question. And I would submit.
But there was no probate.
There was no probate. And that's why we did go into the argument about this trust agreement effectively operates as a deed.
Well, if we don't agree with that analysis, what are we left with?
If you don't agree with that analysis?
That's right.
I think the trust instrument itself can vest title, whether or not you interpret it as a deed.
But we, all, but all we get to look at the spendthrift provision, or do we have to determine that the TEDRA agreement is void or unenforceable in order to interpret the trust document, since it precedes our consideration of the trust document?
The TEDRA agreement, I think you have to consider that to be ineffective as to this transaction for multiple reasons. First of all, TEDRA is designed to resolve disputes among the parties to the trust. There were no disputes among the parties to this trust. The dispute was with a non-party, my clients who purchased the property at a sheriff's or at a sheriff's foreclosure sale. Second, there was no ambiguity that would require an interpretation. And third, the property had already been distributed. And so you can't have an after the property had been distributed, and then you go back and change the terms of the trust so that you can try to claw back the property that was
Understood, but counsel posits that there might have been taxes due and there might have been creditor expenses. Wouldn't the other beneficiaries of the trust have some potential interest in those liabilities such that there was the need to appoint a trustee and resolve some issues?
There's no evidence of that in the record to justify that kind of a conclusion or a need to have a TEDRA provision. But more importantly, the purpose of this TEDRA agreement was not to clarify an ambiguity in the trust. It was to try to rewrite the trust so that it no longer the property no longer vested in Thomas Anderson after 5 years.
Does the record show if there were any residuary assets, excluding the property that your the redemption rights were at issue?
There's no evidence in the record of that one way or another.
So back to Judge Applewood's question, do we need to address the TEDRA agreement first before we look at the trust agreement language?
I think you have to determine that the TEDRA agreement is not applicable and is not enforceable in the context of this series of events for all the reasons that we've identified in our briefing. There simply was no reason to have that TEDRA agreement, or at least the provisions in the TEDRA agreement, appointing a trustee, if you needed a trustee, okay, fine. But the provision of the TEDRA agreement that purports to interpret the distribution clause when there was no ambiguity whatsoever that would require a rewrite of the TEDRA agreement for that purpose, and we've pretty well covered the spendthrift aspects of that. But I would also like to just touch briefly on the delivery issue in terms of is this document an effective deed? And I think the estate of O'Brien and the corporate dissolution of the Ocean Shores cases both plainly says that you look at the intent of the testator or you look at the intent of the party who's granting it and determine whether or not they intended for there to be a transfer. And I think in the corporate dissolution case, it concludes that if it hasn't been unwound by the time the person is deceased in this case, then it is effective. Thank you.
There's nothing in the record that indicates that shows that Performance Construction was aware at all of this deed, this unrecorded deed to Chang and Cascade at the time that the transaction with the trust occurred, none whatsoever. And the party that is asserting notice, either constructive or actual, they're the ones that have the burden of coming forward with some evidence about that. So that assumption that there was some sort of deliberate attempt to maneuver around a deed that Performance had no knowledge of makes no sense.
Well, whether or not Performance did, Anderson. And you certainly had to work hand in glove with Anderson for all of this to occur.
Well, Anderson had to give the deed, yes.
Anderson gave the prior deed also.
Anderson gave the prior deed. Anderson as trustee gave the second deed. Anderson as an individual gave the prior deed. Now, if I give a deed to property I don't own, it doesn't do anything. If someone is willing to pay me for a quitclaim deed to property I don't own, then they can pay me. I didn't warrant that there was any, there's no warranty in that deed. It's titled bargain and sale deed, but it's not a bargain. It doesn't have bargain and sale language in it. It's a non-statutory deed, so it doesn't have statutory warranties, and there are no express warranties in it. So that's all that is. Now, is that between Chang and Cascade and Anderson? Yes, but not between Performance and Chang and Cascade. That's their problem that they have to deal
with. But to the extent that Anderson as trustee is attempting to avoid a transaction by Anderson as individual beneficiary, does the court have equitable considerations that could quiet title in favor of Chang as against Performance?
I don't see where they would come from. Somebody had to make a decision. I mean, you looked at the trust agreement. Is it easy to make a decision about this? Tom Anderson's a retired truck driver with an eighth grade education. He's not the sort of guy that can figure that sort of thing out. So they made a judgment about who was entitled. They didn't ask the question, is there a will? They went into court and said, there's no will, Your Honor. Well, there was a will. So they made a mistake in their investigation. They picked the wrong person to get the deed from. That's their problem. They just made the wrong decision about it. And so we found the trustee, got the beneficiaries together, got them to appoint a new trustee, interpreted the trust instrument itself, and got a deed. They don't have a deed. They cite no authority that says that a trust instrument itself can be a deed to convey property to anybody, let alone five years after the grantor died. They don't cite a single case.
Thank you. The next case is In Re.